had so many things to deal with.
Thousands of people, particularly indigenous people, local people, have been marching here in Belém. Many of them wear your father's image on their t-shirt. He's become a symbol like Che Guevara. And I'm wondering at this point, while there is so much at stake, what gives you hope?
What gives me hope is to know is that we know have today a youth movement, a youth that is very conscious about their role. Know that my daughter, who is here in the COP, dreams and wanted to continue the fight of my father. Every year since he was killed, we organize the Chico Mendes Week, where we have the youth working, that the legacy of his work continues.
Angela Mendes, the daughter of the Brazilian rubber tapper and labor leader Chico Mendes, assassinated in 1988. He fought to preserve the Amazon rainforest and the indigenous people who live there. We spoke to Angela Mendes at the UN Climate Summit in Belém, Brazil, last week. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM, and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of our lungs on www.kboo.fm. Thanks for tuning in.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, it's an all-night Jimi Hendrix birthday party at the Wiggle Room the night after Thanksgiving, starting at midnight Friday, November 28th until 6 a.m. Saturday, November 29th on your favorite community radio station, KBOO. 6 hours of Electric Church with Jimi Hendrix for his birthday.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Newport wants a helicopter back, a rare comic sells for more than $9 million, and in international news, Paris investigators make more arrests related to the recent Louvre burglary. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, November 25, 2025. I'm Eric Leuschner. A U.S. district judge just ruled the U.S. Coast Guard must immediately return a rescue helicopter to the city of Newport. In an opinion issued last night, Judge Ann Aiken found that the sudden relocation of the helicopter last month put people in danger and that the Coast Guard has not provided legally required notice before moving the aircraft to North Bend. The federal government did not actually offer the court an explanation for the move, and the Coast Guard has said it is still able to adequately respond to emergencies on the coast. But Aiken wrote that, quote, Newport fishermen and the community at large will face serious danger due to the lack of rescue helicopter coverage, end quote. The order currently remains in effect for 14 days, and Judge Aiken is said to be considering a permanent injunction on the removal of the helicopter. State Representative David Gomberg, a Democrat from Newport, said, quote, This is good news and a great relief for our coastal communities. Fishermen will be safer, at least temporarily. We look forward to a permanent decision very soon, end quote. This comes 3 days after the nonprofit Newport Fishermen's Wives and Lincoln County filed suit challenging the helicopter's removal. Questions about the action have been around for far longer. The U.S. Coast Guard has stationed a rescue helicopter in Newport since 1987, right after three fishermen died when their boat capsized about 20 miles off the central coast. The Coast Guard considered removing the aircraft in 2014, but ultimately backed off in the face of a loud public response. A subsequent law supposedly bars the Coast Guard from closing air bases unless it determines public safety will not be impacted. It also requires the agency to provide notice and accept public comment before making changes. However, the Coast Guard removed its helicopter from the Newport Municipal Airport in late October without telling the community. Around the same time, federal defense contractors began making inquiries about leasing land around the airport, and want ads for detention officers who could work at a U.S. ICE facility appeared. As a result, some are concerned the Trump administration is considering putting an immigration detention center in Newport. Oregon is one of only a handful of states without such a facility. The state of Oregon has also weighed in, adding to the drama in Newport by filing a lawsuit of its own yesterday. Everyone dreams of finding riches hidden in an attic or garage. Now, three brothers clearing out their late mother's house unearthed a copy of the first issue of Superman. They sold it for $9.12 million at a Texas auction house, making it the most expensive comic book ever purchased. The brothers discovered the comic book in the attic in a cardboard box beneath layers of brittle newspapers covered by dust and cobwebs. They also discovered a few other rare comics their mother had collected around the time of World War II. The Superman comic was said to be in excellent condition. The copy was rated a 9 out of 10 by comics grading company CGC, meaning it had only the slightest signs of wear and aging. The mother told her children there was a valuable comic book collection hidden away, but they had never seen it until they put her house up for sale. They sent a message to the Heritage Auction Company, and the vice president of Heritage flew out to San Francisco earlier this year to inspect the Superman issue, planning to show it to other experts for appraisal. The Superman No. 1 comic was released in 1939. 500,000 issues were printed, and experts estimate there are fewer than 500 still around. The previous record for the world's most expensive comic book had been set last year when an Action Comics No. 1, which first introduced Superman to the world as part of an anthology, sold for $6 million. In 2022, another Superman No. 1 sold for $5.3 million. The current buyer did not wish to be identified. One of the brothers said, quote, "This isn't simply a story about old paper and ink. This was never just about a collectible. This is a testament to memory, family, and the unexpected ways the past finds its way back to us. Superman was the first superhero to enter pop culture." The Trump administration will appeal the Comey dismissal. Incumbents are quitting Congress ahead of the next big election, and voters are angry about perceived insider trading. With those stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Lindsay Callaghan was legally appointed, and that's the administration's position. I know there was a judge who is clearly trying to shield Letitia James and James Comey from receiving accountability, and that's why they took this unprecedented action to throw away the indictments.
White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt says they'll appeal the decision to dismiss charges against former FBI Director James Comey and New York Attorney General Letitia James. A federal judge agreed with Comey and James that the acting U.S. attorney bringing the cases was not properly named to that role. Though charges can be refiled, Comey's lawyers argue his statute of limitations has run out. President Donald Trump specifically ordered the investigations, one of several reasons they've been troubled. At one point, DOJ lawyers revealed the grand jury never saw the revised indictment against Comey, casting it into doubt, and the previous U.S. attorney resigned after saying the case against James is too weak to pursue. Meanwhile, BBC Chairman Samir Shah apologized for the editing of a Trump speech in one of the network's flagship news shows. Shah told a British House of Commons committee he regrets edits made in an episode of the documentary series Panorama, which made it seem the president directly called for violent action against lawmakers on January 6th.
I'd like to take this opportunity, first of all, to apologize to all the people who believe in the BBC and care for it and wish it to survive and thrive.
Trump demanded the network apologize directly to him, which Shah didn't, or be sued for $1 billion, which is being dismissed as an empty threat. The president routinely threatens American news outlets at Times-winning programming changes and or large payouts. Free speech advocates argue U.S. media corporations have capitulated to protect themselves from revenge Trump says he would take via regulatory action by the FCC. Georgia Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene says she's retiring from Congress in January after a sharp break with the president. Trump says he's glad to see his former ally go, citing her support for a petition to force the Justice Department to release its files on dead billionaire sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein.
He started backing perhaps the worst Republican congressman in our history, stupid person named Massey. I said, go your own way. And once I left her, she resigned because she would never have survived a primary.
Another close Trump ally is suffering whiplash after meeting with New York City Mayor-elect Zohar Mamdani. Trump denounced New York Republican Elise Stefanik for calling him a jihadist while campaigning for governor. Mamdani and Trump consistently exchanged insults in the lead-up to Mamdani winning the election, but both say a recent White House meeting was productive. An unusually large number of congressional incumbents are quitting ahead of the midterms. NPR reports at least 10 senators and 41 House members won't seek re-election. Analysts cite voter anger, especially at Republicans, and voter disgust is giving new momentum to legislation aiming to prevent members of Congress, their families, and aides from trading stocks. Republican Tennessee Representative Tim Burchett says this bill would weed out the crooked politicians debasing D.C. work.
Yeah, everybody talks about this place being a dadgum swamp. It's not a swamp. A swamp is something cool God created. It filters water. Animal life lives and flourishes around it. This is a sewer. This is created by man, and it needs to stop.
Watchdogs say Capitol Hill has access to insider trading information far beyond what ordinary citizens have, which is why lawmakers regularly beat the markets by wide margins. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Not surprisingly, food banks across the Northwest and elsewhere are expecting record distributions this holiday season. Some have already been preparing for months. Laura Hatch reports from Montana.
Changes to SNAP benefits have Montana food banks working hard to help families this Thanksgiving. North Valley Food Bank in Whitefish has been preparing for this for months. Executive Director Sophie Albert says they're expecting record-breaking food distribution this year.
Originally, we planned for anywhere between like 550 to 600 families, which is already a significant increase from the past couple of years, but now we have ramped it up to 800.
Albert says the increase is due to the lapse in SNAP benefits during the government shutdown and new SNAP work requirements taking effect in December. To qualify, non-disabled adults aged 18 to 64 without dependents will now have to work or be in a training program at least 20 hours a week. Albert says the new rules could cause 12,000 Montanans to lose their benefits. She adds families were already struggling with higher housing costs and more expensive groceries over the past few years. Over the last few weeks, she says North Valley Food Bank has seen at least 50 new households coming in each week and more people coming in more often.
Maybe some families in the past just needed to come to us the last week of the month because their benefits had run out or their budget had run out for the month, and now they need to come more frequently.
Albert emphasizes the community response is still going strong, with more than 20 community-led food drives in the Whitefish area in the past few weeks. That's helped them collect enough food to give all the families they serve a turkey or ham and all the Thanksgiving staples. She describes meeting the need as a marathon and not a sprint, and says the food insecurity crisis is far from over.
We're ready for the moment, and we're hoping that everybody who needs food will come to us, and we'll also hope that we see this community support continue through the next couple of months.
I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection.
Since the pandemic struck, many parents have sought alternative schooling methods. Homeschooling seems to be gaining traction. Catherine Carley tells us more from Massachusetts.
An increasing number of Massachusetts families are embracing the practice of unschooling. It's an educational approach based on the growing homeschool movement and allows for self-directed learning based on the students' personal goals. Roberta Van Black, a board member of Advocates for Home Education in Massachusetts, says there's been an uptick in interest since the pandemic as more parents seek alternatives to public schools.
You may say, you know, I want a very free form, let's just do what you're interested in today, and then you may discover that you have a child who likes workbooks and structure and likes having a schedule, so personality can just play into it as well.
Critics argue that unschooling lacks structure and could hinder students' ability to prepare for higher education. But supporters say self-directed learning improves critical thinking and provides kids with a supportive environment where they can explore their strengths and excel academically. Just 1.3% of Massachusetts students are homeschooled, a rate enrollment experts say is 50% higher than before the pandemic. Most homeschooled students are white and from middle-class, single-income families. Some choose to attend one of 11 self-directed learning centers in the state, where they can take classes, socialize, and pursue their hobbies or potential careers. Van Black says there's been a snowball effect with unschooling. As more parents choose this route, more parents see it as a viable option for their own kids.
A big benefit of homeschooling is the flexibility, and you need to sort of be willing to pivot when you find what works for your family and your child.
She says many parents are concerned with large class sizes in traditional schools and are attracted to the individual attention they can provide for their child at home. She notes many homeschooled children excel in college, including those following an unschooling approach, especially in their ability to interact with their professors. Parents must still get approval from their school districts and submit a homeschooling plan for their child, but the oversight is minimal and the learning possibilities are endless. This story is based on original reporting from Maria Probert with the Boston Globe. I'm Catherine Carley for New England News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in depth. At 6 o'clock, it's This Way Out. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will show steady rain with a low of 43 degrees. Tomorrow will be cloudy with even more precipitation. The high will be 51. Today in history, in 1915, Albert Einstein presented his field equations of general relativity to the Prussian Academy of Sciences. Those equations describe the main relationship between matter/energy and the geometry of space-time. The quote of the day is from Dr. Einstein, who said, quote, "Learn from yesterday, live for today, hope for tomorrow. The important thing is not to stop questioning." Paris officials today announced there have been 4 more arrests in connection with a jewelry heist at the Louvre Museum, which netted some $102 million worth of jewels. 2 men and 2 women from around Paris, ranging in age from 31 to 40, were taken into custody. Prosecutors did not release the role they are suspected of having played in the theft. Police can hold the detainees for questioning for up to 96 hours. The jewelry itself has not been recovered. It includes a diamond and emerald necklace Napoleon gave to Empress Marie Louise. A police dragnet previously caught a number of other suspected members of the robbery team, making the arrests in October. Magistrates filed preliminary robbery and criminal conspiracy charges against 3 men and 1 woman. The robbery has focused attention on security at the Louvre, the world's most visited museum. The thieves took less than 8 minutes to use a window to force their way into the Apollo Gallery, raising questions about the quality of that security. They broke into the jewelry display case with disc cutters, descended on a freight elevator, and met up with riders on scooters who took them all away. One piece, the emerald-set imperial crown of Napoleon III's wife, contains more than 1,300 diamonds, was later found outside the museum. Congressional members from New Mexico and some tribal leaders want protection from oil and gas drilling. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Members of New Mexico's congressional delegation and Pueblo leaders held a press conference in Albuquerque last week to urge Department of Interior Secretary Doug Berga to visit Chaco Culture National Historical Park in the state and to continue protections from oil and gas drilling. KUNM's Jeanette Didios has more.
In October, the Bureau of Land Management began a process to revoke protections for 10 miles around Chaco Canyon to allow for possible oil and gas exploration. This comes after the New Mexico Congressional Delegation and Pueblo governors held a press conference in front of the U.S. Capitol in September to demand that the Trump administration protect Chaco. Governor of the Picaris Pueblo, Craig Quinchello, spoke on the cultural significance of Chaco.
Our ancestors lived there, prayed there, studied the stars there, and carried teachings outward into our modern Pueblo communities. Our ties to Chaco live in our songs, our ceremonies, our pilgrimages, and our ancient roads and shrines that stretch far beyond the park itself.
U.S. Senators Martin Heinrich and Ben Ray Lujan were in attendance alongside Representative Melanie Stansberry. Stansberry said during the federal shutdown, tribal leaders were unable to reach the Bureau of Indian Affairs, but did receive a letter from the Trump administration informing them that they had 2 weeks to respond to Chaco being taken out of the federal protection.
Can you imagine the cruelty, the insensitivity, the stupidity of an administration contacting tribal leaders as they are trying to figure out how they are going to feed their people and balance their budgets and keep their public safety in order, to tell them that they are going to take away their most sacred lands and open it up for private oil and gas drilling.
Congressional and Pueblo leaders invited Burgum to visit Chaco and to have a meaningful talk with them. I'm Jeanette Didios.
A Kodiak, Alaska-based nonprofit dedicated to supporting families with newborns is expanding into the Northwest Arctic Borough. KMXT's Davis Hovey has more on how Kodiak Kindness is helping families across the state raise babies.
For years, Noya Kwanda Baltazar has been teaching infants in Kotzebue through a local program that serves children with disabilities or delayed development. It's the only such program based out of a school district in the state. Baltazar says it's about helping kids from birth to 3 years old and their families around the Manilik service area, which covers 12 communities in northwest Alaska from Kotzebue to Kobuk.
Working with birth to three, it's always good about helping families, ensuring that they're strong, supported, and any way we can support families and nursing moms to help their babies grow, I think is great.
Baltazar and Francis Williams from Ambler are bringing their experience working with children to Kodiak Kindness as they continue doing what they already do, but under the new title of peer counselors.
I'll be able to do my own mix, you know, with Kodiak Kindness and my Inupiaq traditions.
Williams says she uses native plants like stinkweed or spruce trees to make salves or other traditional medicines to help her friends, family, and neighbors heal from the land. Aside from the traditional knowledge Williams has from her mom and aunties, she'll also be able to help her community with assistance from a certified lactation consultant if she wants support virtually from the Kodiak Kindness team via telehealth. Kodiak Kindness's two new peer counselors in the Northwest Arctic Borough come online this winter and hope to start enrolling families in the region early next year. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Will the issues that are currently dividing voters in the U.S. lead to uncomfortable Thanksgiving dinner conversations? Eric Galatas brings us some expert advice on how to avoid problems later this week.
As Coloradans travel distances near and far to gather with family and friends for the Thanksgiving holiday, many are deeply anxious that the nation's polarized political and cultural views will explode across the dinner table. Psychologist Christine Miles says you could try to change the conversation or walk away, but holidays are really about connecting. She says most family blow-ups start as listening mistakes, not ideological clashes. Instead of trying to change someone's mind, Miles encourages people to ask questions such as, "Tell me more. And how does it make you feel?"
When you go in with seeking to understand rather than trying to agree, you can really find out some things about people that you might find quite appealing, because we're not used to asking questions that really get to know people on a deeper level.
Miles says people frequently show up at holiday gatherings braced to avoid things such as conflict or getting trapped inside that funny uncle's latest conspiracy theory rabbit hole. But she says it's also possible to focus on what you'd like to gain. Miles suggests taking a moment to set a goal. Do you want to prove your point, or do you want to leave the gathering with the relationships intact? When you decide that your focus will be understanding, Miles says it's much easier to de-escalate or prevent conflicts altogether. When people feel understood, they become less defensive. She says the first step is to ask questions, then show them that you are really listening.
If I say to somebody, "Hold on a second, I want to make sure I get you, not argue with you, but get you," and then I tell them exactly what they told me, now you've just won over a fan.
More Americans are anxious about this year's holidays than last year, according to a recent American Psychiatric Pediatric Association poll, and some families are skipping them entirely. Miles says there are many reasons people feel anxious during holiday gatherings. Even though family members share common bonds and experiences, our memories of those experiences don't always match up.
And that's what makes our family experience so rich, but it's also what makes it highly conflictual. But we want to maintain the relationships because, you know, that's what helps us feel grounded and important and connected in this world.
This is Eric Galatis for the Colorado News Connection.
Now we go to our weekly Global Citizen commentary from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. The United States has forged a peace proposal with Russia that, as the French are putting it, amounts to Ukraine's capitulation. For President Volodymyr Zelensky, the worst possible world stares him in the face, a world in which Ukraine must sacrifice territory and self-defense to gain something resembling peace, and Russia must sacrifice nothing, yet gain everything it has asked for and more. It is a dangerous moment for Ukraine in more ways than one. An investigation into corruption in Ukraine has found that allies of the president have enriched themselves during the war. The proposed peace plan comprises 28 points. I will comment on those points that seem most consequential for Ukraine's immediate future. On territory, Ukraine must withdraw troops from the Donetsk region in the east, ceding control to Russia of land it has failed to conquer, as well as the areas of Kherson and Zaporizhia it seized illegally. Next, Ukraine must not seek to join NATO and must enshrine that pledge in its constitution. Next, Ukraine must agree to significantly reduce the size of its armed forces from between 800,000 and 850,000 military personnel to 600,000. Next, to ensure Ukraine's security, the U.S. and NATO agree that a significant, deliberate, and sustained Russian attack on Ukraine, quote, shall be regarded as an attack threatening the peace and security of the transatlantic community, unquote. The U.S. and NATO will immediately consult to determine the measures necessary to restore security, including armed force. Next, Ukraine will not be allowed to host NATO troops, contrary to European proposals to send troops to deter Russia from attacking again. Next, to reconstruct Ukraine's economy, it will receive $100 billion in frozen Russian assets, $200 billion less than had been planned by the Europeans, and $200 billion, therefore, that will be returned to Russia. The U.S. would get a 50% cut of the profits of investment made in Ukraine with that $150 billion, moreover. Next, if Russia complies with the agreement, its membership in the Group of Eight will be restored. Sanctions will be lifted, quote, in stages and on a case-by-case basis. If Russia were to attack Ukraine again, quote, in addition to a decisive, coordinated military response, says the agreement, all global sanctions will be reinstated and recognition of the seized territories will be revoked. How did this deal come about? The key architect of the plan, Kirill Dmitriev, is head of the Russian Direct Investment Fund. The U.S. Treasury in 2022 said of that fund, quote, while officially a sovereign wealth fund, the fund is widely considered a slush fund for President Vladimir Putin and is emblematic of Russia's broader kleptocracy. Dmitriev worked mainly with the appallingly ill-prepared Steve Witkoff, Trump's special envoy. Dmitriev leaked the outline of the plan and got certain U.S. media to pick it up as though it was a done deal, reportedly catching some State Department officials by surprise. Putin is pretending that he too was in the dark and that Russia is in the same position as Ukraine. In fact, this is a plan made in Moscow, and Putin evidently senses that Russia is on the verge of complete victory. Donald Trump has made a complete about-face. After the fiasco in Alaska, Trump seemed to move to Ukraine's side, convinced that Putin was insincere about a ceasefire and was playing him for more time. Now, Trump may believe Russia has the upper hand on the battlefield and holds all the cards, as he once told Zelensky. Trump is again accusing Zelensky of ingratitude. He's reportedly given Zelensky 1 week to accept the peace plan or face loss of U.S. support, meaning an end to sales of weapons to NATO partners for transfer to Ukraine and sharing of intelligence. He'll have to like it, said Trump, and if he doesn't like it, then they should just keep fighting, I guess. But Trump has also said the proposal isn't his final offer. Zelensky did not reject the proposed agreement outright, but in a nationwide address, he said that now Ukraine can face a very difficult choice, either losing dignity or risk losing a major partner. Europeans, except for Hungary, all agree that the deal is a bad one for European and Ukraine security. People familiar with the U.S.-Russia plan urge caution in reading it. Many points need clarification. They predict that Ukraine, NATO members, and Russia will all propose changes that may postpone any final agreement for many months. At some point, Trump may tire of the process and decide to abandon Ukraine, risking blowback from many Republicans in Congress. Ukraine's European partners must anticipate the worst. It will be up to them, as it is now, to sustain Ukraine until the day a more equitable deal with Russia is on the table. I'm Mel Gertoff for the Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, November 25, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. The producer for the evening news is Josh Salem, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira, Mel Gertov, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, and Laura Hatch. The director of evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
When I'm feeling a little bit low, I listen to my radio, 90.7 on the FM dial. It's always sure to make me smile. KBOO, boo! This is Michelle Shock saying howdy.
Ear to the streets, ear to the streets. Ear to the streets, ear to the streets.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kboo.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kboo.fm.
Follow